I'm speaking today with Anna Garner, a foreclosure defense attorney. She calls herself, quote, an avid advocate for the little guy against institutional defendants, and in fact came out of retirement to represent homeowners in foreclosure. She currently has an active litigation practice, putting the banks to proof of their standing and exposing fraud in the industry. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Anna.
Thank you, Zelly.
So the rash of foreclosures occurring in this country seems to me another symbol of banks making immense amounts of money off the backs of middle class and poor people. A recent article even said that the Bank of America profited 70% more this year, and it seems that no one is immune to foreclosure here. Can you tell us a little bit about foreclosures in Santa Fe and New Mexico?
Yes, I can. And, you know, it appears from the statistics that the rate of foreclosure filings may be dropping somewhat. And some analysts think that it's in a response to the 2010 exposure of the robo-signing scandal and that sort of thing, where the banks were filing suits very quickly and didn't have the proper paperwork. Once people started becoming more informed by searching on the internet or by hiring attorneys, they learned that there were some critical documentation that was required by the bank. And if the banks don't have it, the judges are reluctant to grant summary judgment in favor of the banks. That means they get the judgment for the house without a trial.
Which would be ideal all around.
For the banks, in terms of when they get the judgments.
Right. Right. Can we talk about the numbers of foreclosures here?
Sure. Recent statistics, I've got some statistics for Santa Fe and Albuquerque. And in Santa Fe, we've had a little bit of a drop-off. For example, in October of 2012, they had dropped to about 61 filings per month, whereas in 2010 and 2009, they were up around close to 100 per month. So you can see just in a monthly, and it varies wildly by month. In April of 2013, there were only fewer than 20 filings in Santa Fe. However, in Albuquerque, we show that there were just under 200 filings, foreclosure filings. We do have statistics about the completed foreclosures for the 12 months ending in January 2013 were 2,239, and that's for the whole state. So you can see it's a huge problem in New Mexico.
Tell me that number one more time.
2,239 completed foreclosures. And so I would translate that, I would interpret that as how many houses got sold at an auction where they had previously gotten an order for foreclosure.
Do we have any idea how many total homes have been foreclosed upon since the economic crisis began? I think do we base that about 2008-09? I don't know if we have those numbers, but this is an extraordinary number of homes being taken from people.
No question. What the reports and the news reports are saying is that New Mexico has one of the highest foreclosure rates of any of the Southwest states anyway. And the way I look at it is New Mexico is just blessedly a little behind the times. And so some other states have led the way in foreclosures, such as New York, California, Florida. And that's good for us because we have other case law to look at in other states, where New Mexico just really got going fairly large in 2010 or so, where the foreclosures started getting more numerous. So we still lead the Southwest, unfortunately, but it's also because we're a little behind the times.
And if this is monthly, anywhere from 20 to 100 homes being taken monthly, where are these people going?
It's such a sad situation. People move in with family members, so they're living in crowded situations. People leave the state. We have a lot of people who have to leave the state because they can't find enough work here to support a mortgage and their family. We have people who decide that they're going to even leave the country. I've had several clients who have decided to take early retirement and just leave the country and live somewhere where it's less expensive to live. So we're losing people because of this.
Absolutely. So is there a typical case or a typical person, a typical foreclosure case that you have come across?
I would say they fall into one of several categories. We have the category, let's say, where there is the local small bank or credit union that extends a loan. That's more like the bank portrayed in It's a Wonderful Life, where the bank actually is giving these people a loan and keeping it on the books and not selling it on Wall Street. Those cases are fairly hard to defend because the banks, those small banks keep their paperwork. With the bigger banks where they've been securitized and sold on Wall Street and sold multiple times, a lot of times they can't find all of the documents showing their chain of title and therefore their right to foreclose on that house. And on those cases, we have some defenses that we can use to fight for the people. And those defenses will put the bank to their proof to make sure that they really do have the documentation that they say they have to be able to take that person's home.
And you were saying earlier that you can ask for dismissal and the court will give them 30 days to come up with that paperwork. And can they usually? I mean, can they go back and find this, or is this such a mess that they really can't find their paperwork?
You know, there's a real question about whether they actually find the paperwork or whether they create the paperwork. And that is a huge issue. There are companies that have sprung up whose mission is to, quote, correct defective paperwork in foreclosure actions.
Oh, my gosh.
How do you translate that?
Oh, my gosh.
You know, how do you interpret that particular mission statement? They're creating false documents.
And is there any kind of repercussion? Is there any kind of proof that you can say, wait a minute, this paperwork did not exist?
At this time in New Mexico, what the judges say is because the mortgage follows the note, if the note has the requisite endorsements, and that's a stamped endorsement, either going to the person, the plaintiff who's filing the suit, or in blank, so that the person who's holding the note has possession. If they have that, most judges are saying, well, they've got sufficient proof that they have the documents. There are questions about the assignments of mortgage, however. And the assignment of mortgage is different from the note. We have a note and a mortgage in every loan. The mortgage is the security, and the note is the agreement to pay back the loan, right?
Okay.
So if the note has its paperwork, some of the judges are saying that's all we need. I've been attacking and trying to challenge the assignments of mortgage because many states are saying that the bank must show that it has valid ownership of the note and the mortgage at the time of filing the suit. And a lot of times those assignments of mortgage are very sloppy and not quite up to par. And so that's been an easy target. However, we've had some Court of Appeals decisions that would, I would say, weaken that defense. Some of those decisions are now on up at the Supreme Court. They've been argued, briefed, and heard by the Supreme Court, and we're still waiting for some decisions to come down to clarify what exactly is required for standing.
It does seem that this is really a process, and clarification is needed on so many counts, but in the end, people are losing their homes. I have a friend, well, I actually have several friends I know who have either lost their homes or are in the process of being foreclosed upon. I would like to just talk about one case because it's so mind-boggling. Now, she is or was a former real estate agent and was told she couldn't really come on the radio today. She lost some work and asked to get a home loan modification, really just to pay a little bit less rent. The bank told her, Bank of America, said they couldn't even talk to her until she became delinquent on her payments. When she tried to get loans elsewhere, they said she didn't have enough debt, so she couldn't refinance because she's trying to be a responsible payment here. So she stopped paying her mortgage for 3 years. It took 3 years of non-payment for them to even have a conversation with her. Is this common?
It's not uncommon. And what the part of the story that's very common that I hear over and over, whether it's Bank of America or one of the other, what I call the big fives that were participated in the national mortgage settlement, those banks have routinely had employees tell homeowners who call before they've defaulted, they routinely say, sorry, we can't even talk to you about any kind of loan modification until you've missed three payments. Typically, that's the number. But they will tell the borrower, who at that point still has good credit, good high FICO scores and good credit because they haven't missed payments, but they know they're going to be getting into a little trouble down the line. And the bank basically says, until you default, we're not even going to speak to you. It then forces them to default. If they don't qualify for a loan modification, the bank demands that they completely catch up with those back payments and to reinstate the loan, or that they will institute foreclosure action. So that's actually not true that there's no help available until someone defaults, because the HAMP program does not require that they be in default to be eligible for that. That's a federal program that's been around for several years. So that's just not true, but that's what the banks tell people.
That's what the banks tell people. Now, she also, because she understands real estate, made it clear to the bank, she decided on an in lieu of deed, basically giving her house over to the bank, but made sure she had an agreement there would not be a deficiency judgment against her. Now, she said the bank would never tell her about a deficiency judgment. Can you explain this? New Mexico is a deficiency judgment state, and how this impacts people for years.
Yes, that's a very good question. As an attorney representing homeowners, that is my biggest concern, is to try to prevent a deficiency judgment that my clients might be subject to. So a deficiency judgment is the difference between the amount that the buyer bids on the property and what the bank's judgment is. And the bank's judgment is the unpaid mortgage, unpaid principal and interest, attorney's fees, cost, and that sort of thing, cost of the lawsuit. And that number can be staggeringly large, much larger than the original mortgage was to begin with.
Is there a limit? I think up to $500,000 or something?
There's no limit.
Okay.
I wish there were. I haven't seen any limit anyway. I'm not aware of any limit. So if the bank comes in and bids on that house, and they bid, let's say they have a judgment for $500,000, and that's a very common amount. They might be $900,000. But at any rate, let's say the bank comes in and bids on it at auction. They don't have to bid anywhere near what the house is worth, and they don't have to bid anywhere near what the amount of their judgment is. They can make any sort of bid they want, basically. So let's say they come in and they bid $200,000. That leaves this, quote, deficiency, then, of the $300,000. That deficiency is a judgment, usually a personal judgment against the borrower, that can follow them for as long as 14 years in New Mexico. It lands on, it's a 7-year, they can file a transcript of judgment for 7 years and renew it at the end of 7 years. So it's a horrendous, crippling financial burden to homeowners. Their only way out of it, if they get a deficiency judgment, realistically, the only way out of it is bankruptcy. And not everyone qualifies for bankruptcy.
And if you don't qualify for bankruptcy, I mean, if somebody's already taken your home, what else do they take?
What else do they take?
Okay. And in terms of this bidding, I mean, there's really no competitive bidding. I mean, there should be a process whereby other people can come and bid on the house. But really, the banks are doing, I mean, they're rigging everything, aren't they?
Pretty much. I mean, I feel like it's a very unlevel playing field between the banks and the homeowners. The banks can outman us, outmoney us. There's no question. These big firms that do the foreclosures are very well supported with lots of staff per attorney, and they are able to handle hundreds of cases. Each attorney handles hundreds of cases. I'm lucky if I can do 40 cases in my office. So you can see that there is a huge need for even foreclosure attorneys in New Mexico. There just aren't very many of us, and most of us are overworked.
And so I think a number of people lose their houses because they don't even see an option. They don't even see, so they don't even contact an attorney. I mean, you must be getting people who are at least somewhat educated in the process or feel that they do have a fighting chance. Can you talk about that a little bit?
That's a great question. I have spoken at the Occupy rallies in Santa Fe, and what I tell people is stay in your home, occupy your home. Don't leave your home. Just because the bank tells you that they are, quote, in foreclosure, your case is in foreclosure, don't slink away and leave your home thinking that all of your belongings are going to be thrown out on the yard for your neighbors to see. That doesn't happen. Nothing happens that quickly. But you do have to pay attention if you get served with a lawsuit. And you have 30 days to answer it. You either have to file an answer yourself, if you have done enough research to do that, or find an attorney. And there are options. One option is you may be able to stay in your house for a while longer and get on your feet financially while you're not making the mortgage payments, but get on your feet financially to where when ultimately they do take the house, you're able to have a down payment for your first and last month's rent or deposit, whatever you need to find suitable housing for your family. So I tell people it's very important to stay in your house. The banks will move very quickly on an abandoned house because they know it will deteriorate quickly. But if you stay in it, you have a chance to stay in it with your family for some time and at least fight them and make them prove things. We also have options such as short sale. You mentioned the deed in lieu of foreclosure. That's a common option. When we know that we don't really have any good defenses, we want the the people to offer a deed in lieu and get out from the possibility of a deficiency judgment.
Is that the best way to avoid a deficiency judgment, by the way?
That's a very good way, and that one will prevent the necessity for bankruptcy. So if they give a deed in lieu and the bank accepts it, the bank will typically, that as part of that bargain, will waive its right to any further judgment against the person. So they basically have a clean slate. They've got closure of that property. They don't have any further financial obligation, and they can go on with their lives.
They don't have a house, but they at least don't have up to $300,000, $500,000 in debt. Now,
exactly.
I guess while we're still on this topic, my friend also said nobody ever mentions the idea of deficiency judgment. So people going in blind, the banks don't have any legal force to tell them about deficiency, right? They don't necessarily have to inform any homeowners about what's coming.
They don't, and they do have to tell the homeowner if they don't answer within 30 days that they could get a default judgment. And that's why I tell people, don't just ignore these, because the default judgment will always have in it, unless they've declared bankruptcy before, those default judgments will have a provision for a deficiency judgment. So those people who walk away are endangering their financial future for years. And they don't realize it. They don't realize what a horrendous burden that will be. If they ever get a job where there's a salaried or a paycheck type of job, that can be garnished. Their wages can be garnished. And it's pretty hard to become invisible in this society. You will be tracked down if you have a regular job with a social security number. They can find you no matter where you go. So you run a huge risk if you just ignore the lawsuit or you just abandon your home and try to pretend like the lawsuit doesn't exist. People do it. They get depressed. They feel overwhelmed. They don't understand they have options. They don't understand that attorneys really are not always as expensive as they think. Foreclosure defense attorneys know that people coming into their offices are already in some financial trouble. So most of us have figured out win-win fee plans for people that allow me to help someone and allow them to be helped in a way that doesn't further compound the financial problem.
I am speaking this morning with Anna Gardner, a foreclosure defense attorney here in Santa Fe, helping anywhere from 20 to 100 foreclosures every month in this small city of ours. It's fairly unbelievable. I should mention as well that on September 24th, We Are People Here, which has been investigating a lot of the banking industry recently, sponsoring an open meeting on foreclosure. So you can go to their website, and this will be people just talking about their own home losses and what to do about it, giving options. Something I've also heard about is the bank encouraging people to go and to do small payments anyway. You know, pay what you can, the banks will say, just pay something. But none of this actually goes toward the mortgage. Is this correct? It actually goes toward other kind of fees and everything?
Well, it's even worse than that. It goes into this thing called a, quote, suspense fund.
Oh, no.
Any partial payment that's not the full payment, including any back late payments that might be due, let's say. All right, let's say they're 30 days late on the on a payment, and that's all they're late. If they don't pay all of their back payments and the mortgage, the payment may not be accepted, and that goes into the suspense fund. We see that when we get into foreclosures and they've produced an itemization of all the payments made, and they have this category called suspense fund, and there may be thousands of dollars in it. And what is that? It's basically a black hole of accounting.
And nobody ever gets that back, right?
I haven't seen it. I think I don't know what happens to it, but somehow maybe it converts to the banks once they foreclose and collect on the property. But I recommend to people that they not make partial payments unless the bank has specifically said, we will accept partial payments and apply it to your principal or your balance. And most of them won't. So
they
have to
say and get that in writing, I would assume, because they can say anything, right?
Absolutely. That would be the best way to do it, to prevent that money just going into the black hole and not being applied to anything.
Well, you have written a number of articles online and a whole blog series basically going through some of the steps of what somebody may experience through here. And I think it might be useful. You've mentioned some of them here, but kind of talking about some of the steps that will occur and the point at which you should get an attorney. I like that going down the line. You say this is a good time to get an attorney. Can you just kind of quickly go through some of those steps that people might be experiencing right now?
Well, the first thing that people will experience, of course, they know after they default, there's going to be a lot of communication from the bank. at some point, the bank will tell them that we're giving a notice of acceleration, meaning you have to pay your entire mortgage balance right now. Well, who can do that? Of course, nobody can do that. That's why they borrow the money in the first place. After that goes unresponded to, then typically the banks will turn it over to their attorneys, and then the attorneys will write a letter saying, you know, we're going to be filing a lawsuit unless you catch up, and here's how much it is for you to catch up. People, of course, don't catch up. And so typically a month or two later, the suit will be filed, and then people will be served with a complaint. At that point, that's the best time to consult an attorney, as soon as you're filed, as soon as you are served with a complaint, if not before, so you know what's coming and can at least get some reassurance and lessen your anxiety somewhat. I think people have a misconception that everything's going to happen quickly, and that's why they either abandon their homes or they fail to get an attorney. They think the banks are just going to steamroll over them. That's true if they don't have an attorney. There are many smart people who have been representing themselves pro se and trying to fight with emotions and that sort of thing. I do not recommend that someone not schooled in law try to handle their own motions for summary judgment. Those really are something that require the expertise of an attorney. There are many people who will come to my office at that point when they finally get served with a motion for summary judgment, where they filed their own answer, they prevented a default judgment, but now they're in deep water because they're really in the thick of a legal process. And it's just crazy for them to go in and try to handle that by themselves. Now, I've also been consulted after the fact, after a judgment has been obtained, typically a default judgment, and we've gone into court and asked the judges to set those aside. And to do that, the judges have almost always set them aside if we can show good grounds for a meritorious defense, meaning we've got some good defenses, and some reason that they failed to file an answer. And there are many reasons that would qualify, so I'm not going to go into all of those. But they've got to have those two elements met for the judge to say, okay, I'm going to set this aside and give you an opportunity to prove your case.
And you have mentioned that there are a few cases. You have succeeded in securing people's homes, right? We want to have some ray of hope in here that it's not just people against this huge bank and government industry. They are in bed together now, aren't they?
I feel that they are. I think that the government and the banks being in cahoots together is what brought about the financial collapse of our country. And Gretchen Morgenson wrote a very good book called Reckless Endangerment, where she describes the whole process about how the banks and the government were complicit in this whole economic meltdown. And even the bailout, to me, appeared to be something just to placate the public. It wasn't really anything that the bailout was to placate the public, but it benefited the banks. And then there was the national mortgage settlement, which happened last year. And of that, of course, some of the funds are now and some of the results are starting to trickle down to homeowners. We're seeing a few more loan modifications that are being given, good, decent ones where people can actually afford it. And because the only way that anyone's going to be able to stay in their home these days realistically in New Mexico is for them to get a good loan modification.
Right, right. And so all these homes that are being purchased by banks for the most part and then resold, who are they then reselling it to? And I assume making tons of money.
Well, after the bank bids on it, my understanding is sometimes they'll hold on to their inventory for a while so that they don't release all of the inventory at one time and crash housing prices further. So they're releasing those, and the realtors will tell you this, that they're releasing those fairly regularly, but not en masse. And they're being sold to the public again so the bank can do that loan mortgage thing all over again with the same house.
And then would they be selling it for kind of a rock bottom price, or are they in it to make a profit off of these?
Well, the banks have already made so much of a profit.
Right,
if they sold it for free, they would still have plenty of money. You know, the big defense that I hear in court is, this homeowner wants the house for free. And I tell the judges, the only ones getting a free house these days are the banks.
Absolutely, absolutely. Though there have been a couple cases where if the case is thrown out, do you get the house back and then you don't have to pay further mortgage, or you just throw out the actual foreclosure process on a house?
If a case gets dismissed, what we have is basically a holding pattern and a holding period where the person is not paying a mortgage payment and they're not involved in the foreclosure action, and therefore they don't need an attorney either, so they're not paying attorney's fees. So there is a respite for them so that they can continue to, you know, get back on their feet financially. But no one is getting the house in terms of actually ownership of the house. Now, the homeowner still owns a house until the bank gets a judgment saying that it owns the house. So that there's all up to that point, the homeowner can sell the house. They're still free to sell the house. And I tell people if they have equity, they ought to take a hard look at their financial portfolio, their whole picture. And if they have equity, consider putting it up for sale. We don't know what the future holds. And if housing prices were to continue dropping any, what little equity people have is going to disappear. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen or if we're really on an upswing where housing prices will, again, begin to creep back up. I hope so, but I think it's going to be a long time.
So this doesn't bode well for New Mexico's economy now, does it? I mean, you said that New Mexico is on the bottom here, but what's the big picture here?
The big picture is that I think that laws need to be enacted that are more protective of the homeowner and the consumer. We are the backbone of our society and our financial economy, everything, the individual, all of us here. It's not the government. And so if there are laws that are enacted, both on the state level and on the federal level, that are more borrower-friendly so that we can get out of this mess, I think that we will see a turnaround of our whole economy. I mean, we were so prosperous and everybody was flying high, you know, in the 90s, in the 2000s, the early part of the 2000s. And it's been a really tragic thing to see our economy crash as bad as it has.
Well, the economy and all of these people who are really just trying to get by more and more and losing their homes, I'm sure, just puts them back at the starting place, if not even below. You can't even keep up with it. And speaking with Anna Garner, foreclosure defense attorney, do you have a website or is there a place where people can go to read the best sources that they can, where they can get information if they're facing this?
I think if my name is Googled, my articles come up. They have been published by various blogs, including some national blogs, where people might go to do foreclosure research. Neil Garfield, who has the blog Living Lies, has published some of my articles. Max Widener has published some of my articles. I think his is called StopForeclosure.com. I have a blog called OutsmartTheBanks.com, and that will also have my articles on it. My friend, who's a bankruptcy attorney, Jenny Nelson, has a blog concerning bankruptcy, and she has also published a couple of my articles because bankruptcy and foreclosures tend to go hand in hand with a lot of folks.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. Well, I have so many friends out there who are in this process, and I hope that this has been helpful for so many New Mexicans and Santa Feans, up to 100. This is so hard to imagine. But thank you so much for being here and for trying to clarify this and for providing a little bit of a beacon here in these difficult economic times. When I come back, I'm going to be speaking with Ambassador Christopher Hill, a former ambassador to Iraq, Macedonia, Poland, and North Korea. He'll be speaking on foreign policy. We're going to have a word from our sponsors now. Thank you.
Thank you.